Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Dark Hustle. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast and subscribing and following us. It's super cool. You guys are the best. Also, if you are not a member of our Patreon, what are you doing? Go check it out. It's got multiple levels to choose from, and we have early access over there for all of our episodes and a bunch of other stuff. So go check us out on Patreon.
Hello.
Hey, Miss Brown, it's Bree.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So I found you on Facebook, The Concrete Cowgirl, which is really cool. Let's just start with there. How did this whole Concrete Cowgirl thing come about? Did you guys grow up around horses, or did you just wake up one day and say, I'm going to get into the horse world?
My dad took me around. He has an iron fabrication company in Philadelphia, and a few of the local horsemen would bring their horse trailers to him for repairs, and he brought me to the barn one day so I could see the horses, and it was history ever since. So I was maybe 6 years old then.
So that fell in love at an early age.
That one visit turned into a everyday thing that summer, and then throughout the school year, it was, you know, it wasn't just a day visit. It turned, I want to go back.
Now, did you guys grow up in the city, or did you grow up like in suburbs, or grow up on the outskirts of the city so it was easy for you to access horses, or did you have to travel far?
I grew up in the city, so the horses were always in the city. There's, at one point in time, there was maybe 40 barns in the city of Philadelphia.
I didn't know this. This is just so cool to me. So do they get to see grass, or do they just kind of like?
Yeah, we have, Philadelphia has one of the biggest walking trail parks in the United States. So there's lots of grass, lots of trees, lots of everything.
I didn't know this. I think this is so interesting. Like, because, you know, when you first, like somebody like me, I didn't grow up in the city, obviously, you know, so it's like, to me, it's just like foreign to think that that exists. But now, you know, to hear that it does, it's kind of cool. So
I run a nonprofit in the city for inner city youth called Philadelphia Urban Riding Academy, and it gives inner city children the same opportunity that was given to me growing up with horses, and for free. So they learn horses and horsemanship, and in order to stay in the program, they have to maintain a passing grade average. And,
oh, cool.
And if they don't maintain a passing grade average, it doesn't mean that they are no longer able to be in the program. They just have to, you know, come to the barn, take care of their horse, assigned horse, and they have to do tutoring and homework instead of riding at the school with their friends.
Oh, that gives you an edge, because if they want to ride really bad, like if they fall in love like you did, you know, at a young age, they'll get their homework done and then they'll be able to ride.
Yes. I mean, it worked for me because it was the same thing, you know, if I wasn't doing well in school, I couldn't ride, but I still had to go to the barn and take care of my horse, and I still had that responsibility.
I think it's cool that you're doing this, because I do think, and I don't know if you can agree with this or not, but being around horses or any livestock really teaches you a different set of, I don't want to say morals, but like a different work ethic than just going to a regular job, which both are hard, you know, both are still good, but it's just something about working with another animal that just teaches you things you can't get anywhere else, you know. It's really cool that you're providing that to these kids.
It sets the bar at a different area, so I do agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sets the bar at a different area. horsemanship and work ethics and I think I said responsibility, but they learn to care for a living being at such a young age, and this living being depends on their care.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they wouldn't be able to access that without you. So it's really cool that you're doing that. Now, we talked before, you are very well versed in the breeding industry as well. So you guys are into, you've got a halter stud, correct?
I have 4 halter stallions and 2
holy
halter
cow.
Colts.
So oh, wow.
It's six of them. I'm very new to the breeding. I've just been showing these stallions since they were yearlings and 2-year-olds. And they're now 4, so they'll be standing next year.
Oh. Well, this is going to take you guys on a different avenue, because that'll be fun, though. Did you perceive that happening? Was your goal with them to keep them intact while you showed them, or did you just let it kind of, that's just kind of how it's going to happen?
I've always, at a younger age, looked at, like, quarter horse journals and stuff like that, and I've always wanted to take a horse from the weanling stage through as many disciplines as I could and make them, like, a world champion. And my childhood horse that I had since I was 11 to maybe 28 was a stallion, 28 years old. So I've had him his entire life. So I've always been drawn to stallions for some reason. And these stallions, I wanted the kids to be able to, they handle the stallions all the time, but on a breed level circuit, they're not able to compete with the stallions until they're 18 years old, but they get that handling with the stallions, and I want them to be able to be a part of the breeding process with these mares and babies, and for them to be able to raise their own baby that was bred at home, and then take that baby to the show pen.
Yeah.
And so far, the babies that we have, they all have that concrete somewhere in their registered name. So it gives them a different sense of pride and self-worth and to know that they did it. It's not that there's anything wrong with buying a finished horse, but I come from an era that I'm pretty much self-taught. I never had riding lessons. I would watch other people ride at different barns and stuff. This was before YouTube and the internet. And I would go home and repeat it, what I saw. And I would just ask different people questions. And I'm talking about 7, 8 years old. And that's how I got this far. And they had that same drive. And I want them, I wasn't able to compete on a breed level circuit as a child. And I want them to be able to have that opportunity.
That's so funny that you brought up that you came from an era, because I know the era that you're talking about, and I've talked about this before, like the people that are coming into the horse industry within the last, 4, 5, 6 years, even a little bit before that, the tools that they have at the tips of their fingers is insane. I mean, like just the amount of information on the internet, on like me finding like TikTok, on YouTube, like all the information that's out there. It wasn't like that before. It's exactly like what you just said. If you wanted to learn something, you had to figure it out on your own.
Right. Yep. And my mama, she wasn't able to afford, riding lessons for me, because even back then they were pretty expensive. So I wanted it that bad that I would watch and repeat and imitate what I would see.
Yeah. Well, that speaks volumes that you're able to learn like that too, because that's a hard way to learn. Now, I know I'm looking at the app stud now. Are all of your studs you're going to try to stay into the app breed, but I know you mentioned paint too. So are those the two that you're going to try to stay with, or are you going to kind of venture out of that?
We have two quarter horse stallions. Well, one of the quarter horse stallions is, he has three sets of papers, quarter horse paint and buckskin.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then there's four Appaloosa stallions. So I kind of wanted to, I like the three breeds. I can't really choose which one.
Yeah.
And the kids, you know, I'm like, well, we may as well do them all. It's kind of tough when shows run together, but, you know, want to do them all the best that we can.
Right. I showed apps, so I'm going to have to say I'm a little partial, but we, you're right. All of them have been, I mean, all of them are amazing. They all had their qualities with them, but I'm looking at I'm looking at Strike Acclaim now, and he is gorgeous. I think that's actually the one I saw that you had on TikTok when I commented. He's pretty. So he's four. He's going to be standing this year, right?
Yeah. This coming year.
Very cool. And then the other one, hold on, there's another one that I was looking at too. Yeah, it looks like a really dark, it looks like a bay, but I'm not for sure.
That's the buckskin stallion.
Oh, he's a dark buckskin, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it does take kind of a special person to be able to deal with studs like you do on an everyday basis. Do you think, I know you said you wanted, you know, your kids to kind of be around studs for a particular reason, but do you have mares there too? Are you just going to kind of stay with studs?
Oh, we have mares. They have geldings. So that's who they ride and work with the most are the mares and the geldings. But I want them to be able to handle the stallions because I grew up at a young age handling stallions, and these stallions, a lot of people get tripped out because the four older ones, they get along. They go during their off season, they all go outside together. They live next to each other. They see each other.
Oh,
they
wow.
They don't fight. They don't.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, a lot of stallions, I think, well, with any animal, how they're raised, is what, you know, pit bulls, they get this bad name, you know,
right,
by their
right.
breed. And I think stallions have a stigma with them as well. But I trust the stallions more than I trust some of them there. I'm not going to lie to you. And they're like the biggest puppies, and they're not studdish at all. And one of them, he has maybe 13 babies on the ground, one of the quarter horses, and he's four, and he doesn't even blink at a mare. But if you take one of his brothers, his play brothers away from him, he's screaming and hollering.
That is crazy. You don't hear that. You don't hear that, like, hardly ever. Like, the fact that you put them out together, that you don't hear of that at all. That is kind of trippy. But that's good. That's a good thing. Like, that speaks volumes for your program and what you're doing. So, and your boys. Now, you are going to, I know you said that you're really big about raising them by yourself and from start to finish, which I agree. I think it's something really cool to be able to do that. So you're going to do all of the breeding, collecting, and everything in-house, or are you going to look for a place to possibly help you do that? Are you going to take them to a vet or anything like that? Or
Probably they're going to end up going to a facility up here, a collection facility.
Yeah.
Much of a risk to me for a live cover, and most people that do want to breed or that have been inquiring about these stallions live so far away in Texas and in Michigan and everywhere else, so, you know, having them collected is probably the easiest route.
Now, how far have you guys traveled to show? Do you kind of try to stay within your area, or do you go very far out?
Fortunately for us, a lot of our regional shows are up here on the regional circuit for each breed, but we do go to Appaloosa Nationals, which is in Oklahoma City. Appaloosa World is in Fort Worth, Texas. The WCHA, we go to that. That's in Fort Worth, Texas. That's actually in a couple weeks. Quarter Horse Congress, we go to every year. That's in Ohio. And Paint World is in Fort Worth, Texas. So we're
that's
up
a
and
drive.
Down the road.
How long does it take y'all to get to Oklahoma?
It took me, I didn't go this year, but last year it took me, I drove 14 hours the one day, and then I drove another 8 hours the next day.
Yeah, you're better than me. I also wanted to ask you, what have you seen in the horse industry that you think can help improve kind of what your particular, you know, motive is with separated from, you know, just general breeding and showing and that kind of thing, but what you're doing with your nonprofit? What are things that you can see to help, you know, the industry improve, or things that you think are really great about the horse industry that's just kind of stuck with you and kind of why you're doing what you're doing?
I would like to see, the horse industry become, not the horse industry, the show world, or the horse industry too, to be more inclusive and not just specifically for black and brown kids, but it's expensive for a lot of people. And I think there would be so many more people involved in competing if it was a little bit more affordable. It is very expensive.
It is expensive.
And I think we would see a bigger turnout if, you know, an even bigger turnout if people, first of all, had these opportunities available to them or even knew about them. And if it was affordable, I would like to see, like, breed associations do, like, a scholarship program, grant program for individuals and or especially for these riding academies, because it is super, super expensive. It's already expensive to take care of horses as it is. So.
Yeah. That's like they say, if you want to get into horses, you'll start off with a billion to end up with a million. If you want to be a millionaire in horses, you got to start off with a billion because it's hard to make money in the horse industry. But that is a good point that you brought that up. You know, I think what types of adversities have you seen for kids that are city kids, are necessarily black and brown kids, what kind of challenges have you seen them face kind of coming into the horse industry? Because, you know, in the 80s and 90s, I don't want to sound wrong when I say this, but it wasn't very many. It was almost more like Caucasian-based sport. You didn't really see a lot of diversity. And I think it's great to see more diversity in it because I think it opens up the industry to, like what you said, more people and more growth and more, just generally more people all together would actually help make the horse industry affordable if you could open it up and grow it to more people. So I just wanted to know, I didn't know what kind of, if you had any of those types of issues growing up or things that you saw that you think you don't want to see happen again from the horse industry.
Growing up, so like we're going to say in the 90s, I started competing at 7 years old as a low-level hunter, jumper, and equitation. That was what I did my entire childhood until my early 20s. And I was always the only person of color there. It was only me. Everywhere I went, it was just me. And I would get stared at, and I would hear comments. I remember one time I was registering I've always wanted to do stuff on my own, so I was like 10 years old registering for my own classes to because
yeah,
I like doing that kind of stuff. I felt grown. And I remember I heard some young lady saying, black girls here, and I'm like, did I just hear this? And it freaked me out where I went and told my uncle. And, you know, it went from there to, you know, people asking where I was from. And I said Fairmount Park in Philly, which was this big park that I was just telling you about. And he said, no,
yeah,
tell them exactly where you're from. I didn't want to say that my horse lives in the hood in North Philly. And it was, like, embarrassing to me at the time, but he told me, he said, don't you ever be ashamed of where you come from, because you are coming out here and competing against $40,000 and $50,000 horses at that time with a horse that was born and raised in North Philly that you trained, and
mm-hmm.
you're winning.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this big old raggedy stock trailer with graffiti all over it. It was, and I used to hope there was no parking spots in the front of the fairgrounds where they would have to park all the way in the back, and I would kind of creep off and sneak up. So, but I've learned to embrace it, and the kids today, my kids, they see it, and they're not offended. They ask questions because, you know, they go to horse shows with me, and they ask all the questions. It's just that I have to answer these questions in 2024 is baffling to me. But, and it hurts my feelings for them.
Yeah.
And I'm very protective over them. And it doesn't bother them. They
yeah.
like how it bothers me, but it bothers me for them. And, you know, they're really good kids. They ask all the appropriate questions, and I have to answer them, like, the same way. I think they're a little more bolder than I was, because I was
yeah.
a shy kid, and I would run from it. And I told them, like, I didn't know my grandmother was white until I was in the ninth grade. And I, you know, that's one of the things that I tell the boys, because it's all boys. I tell them, you know, racism and stuff like that, that is a learned behavior. That is something that is taught, because
yeah.
I had no idea that my grandmother was white. And they said, how? I said, I just thought she was a fair-skinned black woman. And I did not know. And I knew I had white cousins that lived in New York, but I didn't know how, but I just knew they were my cousins. But
yeah.
it's not something that we discussed. And my mom and my grandmother and one of my aunts went on this TV show, and it was on Channel 12, WHYY, or whatever Sesame Street came on. And
yeah.
it was called, Are You Black, White, or What? And I said, wait a minute. My mom is white?
That was a show?
I was 14. It was a series.
Oh, okay. I didn't know this.
Yeah, it was a TV series. I still have the newspaper article. And I'm like, my mom is white. I had no idea that my grandmother was Sicilian. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is why I like pasta and stuff. Like, okay, because it's running heavily through my blood.
Yeah.
But I told them, you know, what someone has to say about you says more about them than it says about you. So
that's true.
And they love it. They love, you know, we just went to a show maybe 2 weeks ago, and they loved being, because, you know, a lot of kids and a lot of people, even adults, have this same stallion stigma, and they just feel so prideful walking this big old stallion, the Appaloosa stallion, like 2 weeks ago, walking him into the arena. And this stallion loves these boys. Every last one of those stallions loves those boys. So they have a different relationship with each of them, and they put their heads on them. It's something to be seen.
Well, I think it's badass that you did what you did. One, but two, I think I think, you know, the horses, like I talked about this with somebody else, it's like the horses as a sport, as a whole, we tend to be really, I don't want to say more judgmental, but you just kind of don't see the same things happen in, like, basketball or volleyball or golf or other sports. You know what I mean? Like, they seem to be more welcoming, whereas horse people, I've seen it all my life. Even to me, it's happened to me, you know, like, online and things like that. It's like horse people tend to get real insulated, and they get real cut off, and they don't want nobody new. They don't want nobody nothing. You know, you're an idiot if you ask a question. You're da-da-da-da. And, you know, all of that stuff kind of tied into one. I think it's cool that you're doing what you're doing, but also it kind of represents the things that I think the whole industry needs to do to change if we want to quit complaining about being broke with horses. You know, if you want it to grow, you got to act like you want it to grow and be more welcoming to new people and new things and stuff, just like your kids and the stallions. Like, that's, I think that's dope. I think it's cool, you know, but you'll have somebody out there that's going to say something, or just general people.
It, I can't, I think we all have a different side. Like, I call it my light switch side, because with social media, I can't always respond how I want to, because some of the stuff is just stupid, yeah, ignorant, and downright just stupid and ignorant. And I want to say some things sometimes, like, and it's that little light switch just clicking, like, okay, no, you got to handle this as a professional, but I don't want to handle it as a professional. And
right.
It's just like, you know, you have so many TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook trainers out here that have so much to say that don't have the slightest clue. Like, someone made a comment on TikTok last week about the stallions had their ad photos done, and they were, you know, they were standing in the grass, and the young lady said, oh, well, that's a quarter horse. They're standing him in the grass to hide his feet. And I said, well, what sense does that make? And she said, because quarter horses have bad feet. And they don't want people to see them. I said, that is not true. He's standing in the grass because that has just happened to be the landscape that's close to us. And so she responded again. She said, take a picture of his feet then. And it's like there's that light switch clicking. And I just said, are you looking to breed to him? Do you have a mare that's good enough to be bred to him? Because otherwise, then why am I taking pictures of his feet? If not, then this conversation is just ending right here. So,
right.
It's just like, what? Or it's just, I just thought, you know, you get on the internet and you're suddenly a equine guru or something. It's aggravating, to say the least.
It is, and it's almost like a double-edged sword, because you can probably see what I'm saying when I say this. Like, it's like back then in the night when you didn't have this outlet, the horse world was smaller, but you almost need it. It's almost a good and a bad thing, because it's good that you can get out there and meet. Like, I never would have known you'd existed if it wasn't for social media, so that's a plus for me. But then again, you have the other side of the sword, like, you got to deal with random people that don't want to learn anything about it, and that can be frustrating.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
It'll test you. It'll absolutely. I mean, I've seen knockout, draw out brawls on the internet on some of these groups,
yeah,
like on Facebook and stuff, where people get into it. But I did want to ask you. Now you do lessons there, so your kids, they come and they don't just, it's not just like, oh, take care of a horse for summer camp. They actually take lessons and they show, they do the whole shindig and everything.
Mm-hmm. They clean stalls. They, a couple of the kids, they're taking a horse from scratch, and they've been doing the necessary groundwork. So within the next week or so, they should have a staff on these horses, and they want to compete. They want to run barrels next year, and so they do a little bit of everything, and I let them do a lot of it. Well, the training part and the horsemanship part, I'm always keeping a close eye because I let them know these are young horses that you guys are dealing with. You want to plant positive seeds, and you want to, there's kind of no room for error at such a young age. And when I say young, they're like 4 and 5, but they haven't had anything done to them except for the necessary farrier visits, and that's it. So you want to make this a positive conversation, a positive experience, and not work too much, not work too little, end on a good note. And, you know, we can, so I do supervise that part of it. And then they have a good grip, so I'll, you know, go ahead to the arena, do what we've been working on. I trust them enough to do it. And I actually grabbed one of the horses two weeks ago, and just to see, and I was just amazed that this horse knew nothing, and it was done so well that I couldn't tell if I taught this horse myself or this young guy, Corey, who's 14, taught this horse. And it was, and the horse, I remember, you know, seeing what he taught her lunge-wise, on the lunge line and stuff. And I told him, I said, you know, I was kind of getting irritated with her because she kept her, I thought she wasn't paying attention to me. And she's young, but once I really analyzed the situation, she had her ear on him. And it was, you know, every time she would come around, her ear would check in on him. And I said, oh, my gosh, he's been doing this work with her, not me, and she's checking in with him. And then he told me, he said, I was talking to her. I said, you were talking to her? And he said, yeah, when you were asking her to whoa and stuff, I was saying it in a low voice. And I said, okay. And that's stuff that I would do as a kid. So he's got it. He's got what it takes. He's a natural. But, you know, they do, but anyway, back to your question, they do everything that I do at the barn, they do it as well. Cleaning stalls, feeding, going to get grain, standing with the farrier, whatever, they do it all. They're learning how to wrap legs, bears, they're doing it all.
I think that's awesome. And I want to ask you this, too. I think that being able to have your facility there in the city, you're being able to, you know, kind of touch kids that would never, ever be like me. Like I have a bunch of land around me, or even the other kids that grow up out on ranches, out in Texas and all that kind of stuff. The fact that you're giving them this opportunity is great, number one. Number two, do you think that it has helped situations where if you wasn't available, they would have turned out worse? Like, are there any kids that have kind of come through your program where you can go, okay, I know for a fact that if this kid hadn't come through my program, they would be worse off than they are now, or that they are better off now because of your program?
I think there's a couple of them that are touch and go, and I don't really require them. I'm not going to force you to come to the barn.
Right.
And I'm not going to force you to, you know, take up my time, and I have to, you know, if I look at it in a way as like, all right, well, that's one less kid I got to work with for the day. Not that I mind doing it, but I look at it that way. So there are a few that bounce back and forth from their neighborhoods, and they want to come to the barn, and I just, you know, let them figure it out and make these decisions on their own. Just how, as a trainer or training, you want horses to be able to navigate and figure certain situations out on their own. Now, they also see their peers excelling and stuff that they want to do. So they they have to learn that it's a commitment. And the young guy, Corey, he's there every day. And Corey, he told me, I think when school let out, he said he stopped going to school and started doing virtual school. And I said, why? And he said, because I'm petrified. I said, you're petrified? And he said, I'm scared to go outside because of the gun violence. And it was the most chilling thing for me to hear from a 14-year-old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and there was an incident earlier this year before the school year let out that a few of his friends were on a bus that actually got, you know, shot. Like one of his friends was on the bus and got shot. So he is the main reason why, you know, I do what I'm doing. And I don't mind stay early mornings and late nights at the barn because I know where he is. I know he's safe. And that's, you know, he told me, he said, I feel like a kid again, Aaron. I said, you feel like a kid again. He said, I feel like a kid again when I'm here with you versus, you know, having to take on a grown-up role when he's not at the barn.
I was fixing to say he's a pretty strong kid because, you know, he could easily just sulk back and not care, you know, like he could easily just be like, you know what, I'm done, this is what it is, whatever. But the fact that you're there for him and he's making the choice to get up and go and push himself to try to get away from that, that speaks volumes. That's really awesome.
Yeah, he's the main one. I went to, you know, New Orleans. I had to go to a meet and greet this past weekend, and he was at the barn, and he said, don't you worry, I'm the man of the house now. And I got back there this morning and just peeked in at all the stalls, and I'm so anal with stall cleaning, and they were, I'm just like, wow, these are perfect. Like, I mean anal with stall cleaning. I know I got on their nerves a lot when they were learning, but they grasped the concept. I'm like, every little, they used to say, you can't get every single turd out of this stall. And I said, yes, you can, and you will. every single
you
one.
You just gave me flashbacks to my dad.
Yes, every single one. No, this is not, you know, no child left behind, no turd left behind. Get it out of here. and sweep under the water bucket, sweep under the feed bucket. I want to see mats in the front of that stall and the bedding nicely fluffed up in the center.
That's so awesome you said that, because you know what? It sounds anal, but it's really not. It's those little detail things that, like, you don't think you'll need it at the time, but you will think about it later on in life, and you're almost like, okay, thanks for making me do that, you know?
Yes. I don't even like, and they know, I don't even like loose hay stuck between bedding, sift through it and get it out. It drives me insane. It does something to my OCD, but sift through it, get it out. And, you know, they weren't too fond of scrubbing water buckets every day. But I told them, like, all of these things. I said, you drink out of a clean glass every day, right?
And yep, said, yes, ma'am.
And I said, so why don't you think your horse wants to drink out of a clean bucket every day? You don't want to drink out of a dirty glass. And it has a different smell. And, you know, when horses have fresh water and clean buckets, it encourages them to drink, to want to drink. And, you know, a dry, clean stall, you're getting rid of not just odors and flies, but you're also getting rid of thrush. And I said, have you noticed that the farrier never talks about thrush with our guys? Because they're in a dry stall.
Boom, boom.
So I'm like, it has so many different things certain things play a big part in so many different areas.
Well, you just made me think about something, you know, like the situation that Corey said, or, you know, what he has to live around, or probably some of other kids around there. You know, this is like the city of Philadelphia. This is not like a little suburb. This is the city. And, you know, I will never experience a situation like that. There's a lot of people I know that will never experience a situation like that. And so I think it's very humbling for people out there that have horses to realize that they are kids that would just dream to be able to do a smidgen of what other people do in the horse industry. And so I think it's, I don't know, I just think it's really cool because sometimes you don't, you know, you get around people that have been around horses and stuff, and you hear them complain about some of the littlest things, and it's like, you know what? There are people out here that would kill to have what you have right now.
Yeah, and they know some of the stuff, like some of the barns that I grew up in. They're from that same area, and I used to tell them, like, I didn't have as a hunter and a jumper and an equitation rider, you would think you need this amazing facility, but I would tell them I didn't have that. I had a football field at a high school.
Oh, wow.
And in the city. So you got to think of ambulances, cop cars, cars without music, dirt bikes, four-wheelers flying by.
Oh, my. I didn't even think about all of that. You're right. Holy cow.
And we didn't have jump standards. If I was lucky, my uncle trailered me to a local barn that had that stuff. But he used to set up tires and stack them on each other, put a PVC pole on top, and he would make a jumping course with anything that we could find, and we would just sit on the side of the football field until it was time for, you know, us to practice for a show. So I'm like, I didn't have this. Like, I really came from the concrete, from the muscle.
Right.
And you know, another thing is city horses that are exposed to so much, they're not scared of the stuff that a lot of horses that aren't in the city are afraid of, you know, because you can ride these horses down the street, and they will flat foot walk with their heads down. Meanwhile, a four-wheeler is coming by on two wheels, and they won't flinch because, you know, this is what they're used to. And I would tell the kids the best thing you could do is to, you know, put a horse in the city and, you know, just you don't react, they won't react. They're looking at you as their leader and, you know, they can feel what you're feeling. And if you don't react, they won't react. And you take them out with an experienced horse who's not going to react, and they see that experienced horse has been riding through these streets, they're going to be like, oh, I guess I just better chillax too and keep on going. And it makes, you know, when you go to the in a show pen, whether you're doing a trail class, a Western Pleasure class, a jumper course, and you'll see the horses will see different things, different obstacles, cameras flashing. Certain horses do not respond to or forget using earplugs. They just don't. They're so used to seeing much different and bigger things at home that when you go here, they're like, oh. Yeah, that's cute. Like that. Like you should see the fire truck that just rolled by last week.
No, you just blew my mind because I didn't even think about that. You're absolutely right. Like my horse that I grew up on, she would absolutely, and she was great. She was, you know, I'm not trying to say anything bad about her. You know, we were good together. She was a pretty good horse, but she absolutely probably would have flipped in any type of environment that your horses are used to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, even some of the ones that you think or people say that are broke, and they've never seen what your horses have seen, I think that's probably two different types of broke.
Yeah. And they, Corey, I was taking him home today, and he was asking about, because he asked if I could teach someone how to train a horse, and I said no, you can't. I mean, that's why there are trainers, and some better than others, and that's why you know, especially for horsemanship stuff, that you could tell someone what to do. You could tell someone how to bake a cake. You can give them the seasoning, but if they're not going to apply it and add what needs to be added, what it needs to be added, it's not, it's something that's in you. And I told Corey, I said, when I was 14, I was just like you. My stallion, he knew how to bow. He knew how to shake hands. He knew how to sit. And
oh, wow.
He can also, you know, do a hunter course, do a jumper course, do a tack change, go in and do Western Pleasure, and then do another tack change and go in and run barrels. So it's, you know, I've always liked doing that. And he was a stallion who would ground tie. And I teach all of the horses how to ground tie, and the kids are just so fascinated by it that they just stand there. And then most of them are voice commands. So, like, back up, come here. They all know what that means. And I mean not back up a step. I mean back up 10 steps. You just tell me back up.
That is pretty cool, though.
And I told Corey, and I said, no, I can't teach someone how to teach it. But if it's in you, you can bring it out of someone, because it's a heightened, to do horsemanship or natural horsemanship, it's a heightened sense that you have to have within yourself. It's psychological. It's all of these different things. And I told him the easiest way to do it is to put a group of horses in a pasture, and you watch how they communicate with each other. And you compare from horse to horse to horse to human, and then you turn around and you do that back. And that's what they understand. I said, you don't see horses in the pasture patting each other on the back or on the neck, but people do it, right? And he said, yes.
Right.
I said, why? And he said, because they want to tell them, good boy. I said, but what do you see horses doing in the pasture? And he said, running? I said, well, no. What do you see them doing together if they're touching each other? He said, scratching each other on the back. I said, so that's something that they understand. That feels good to them. That's a good moment. So why not scratch a certain spot versus patting? Because we're trying to speak their language. We're foreign to them. And he said, that makes so much sense. And you got to hear him talking. He talks very slow. But he said, that makes so much sense, Aaron. And I said, I've never been the pat good boy type. I've always scratched. Because I don't want to be petted. I said, do you want to be petted when you do something good? And he said, no. I said, but a scratch would feel good, right? And he said, yeah. I said, all right.
I didn't think about it like that. That's actually a really good, like, analogy, you know?
And this was when Ariat Boots, they were just making English riding apparel, not Western.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. They only made English riding apparel for a long time.
I did not know that.
That was my real age. Yes. I knew their catalog. It's crazy, but that's how much of a horse crazed kid I was, and that's what I would do when I was not at the barn, feeding, and that's what I did. And you want it a lot differently, and that's like, it's kind of like people who grew up with a two parent household, and
yeah.
People who don't have any parents, like people who grew up in a two-parent household, they don't know how it feels to not have that because they've always had it. But a person
right.
who doesn't have it, that's something that they always and I think, yeah, I don't know if that was a good analogy, but I think that's
no, I'm,
it's
I'm
kind of like one of
throwing.
Those things.
Yeah. No, I pick it up exactly what you're throwing. And it's almost probably like I had a discussion with a collegiate coach, and we kind of talked about this very briefly. Like, it's almost easier to teach a person about horses that has a fresh slate than a person that was, born and raised around it, you know, kind of just grew up around it, and it's not to offend them. I'm sure they have the same, you know, they have a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge, a lot of that kind of little stuff that you don't ever think about. But it is kind of almost easier for horses, particularly, because, you know, we're talking about the horse industry, not basketball, softball, whatever. It's almost like easier right. to teach them when they have a fresh slate and they are curious. They want to know everything versus trying to teach somebody. Well, you probably know exactly what I'm saying versus trying to teach somebody that already knows it all about.
Oh, yeah, that is so true. And like with the clean slate, and I explained to Corey, maybe I don't remember what conversation because it happens so often, but with training a young horse that's never been touched, I think I even posted this on my social media that look at her. His horse's name is Philly Girl, and her registered name is Cordially Miss Concrete. And I told him to look at her as a blank canvas. So from the moment you pick up a stick and string and a lunge line, and you go to communicate with her, you go to have a conversation with her, you're planting seeds on this blank canvas. If the opportunity is yours to make this as beautiful of a painting that you want. A lot of times you don't understand artwork. I don't. But to some people, different artwork has a different look. It's pretty, so and to some people, and I'm just like, you make her, she's a clean slate. So you plant your seeds, and you paint her as beautiful as you want her to be. Now, and I told him, versus a horse that's already, say you get a horse from an auction, this horse, you don't, as a trainer, horseman, horsewoman, it is your job to, you have to, then it's like dealing with a Rubik's Cube. That's what I explained it to him. And you have to figure
out so true, though.
Why the horse is the way it is, because you didn't plant these seeds. You don't know. You didn't pick these colors. But something's not right with this horse. And you got to figure out why. And I told him, I said, it's not necessarily, it's usually typically not the horse's fault, the reason why they are the way they are. Something has happened. And you, as a horseman, that is your job to figure it out and rewire it and make it the best experience for them. So
that's a really great that's a really good analogy. Like I like the way it's easy. I like the way that you're doing it as far as the clean slate and artwork, and you want to make it beautiful because that's really smart.
I told him, I said, I'm not good with beginners, even when I was an instructor for years for this another big barn in Philly. I could not teach beginners because I know within myself I don't have the patience. So,
you're doing something right, because the way you just explained the whole bacon and everything and putting it in there like that, it's almost like a light bulb just – I think I was fixing to tell you, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, because the way you just did that analogy to me made perfect sense.
You know, every horseman and everyone who rides a horse does not mean they're, you know, I don't care what level of a rider you are, how accomplished you are, horsemanship puts you in a bracket by yourself, because not everyone can do it, and that's okay. Some people are Grand Prix level jumpers, but they don't know the slightest bit about horsemanship. And I think, you know, but that they're amazing riders, but there's a big difference, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, there is a big difference. I agree exactly what you're saying. You're faced with a situation that most other people aren't faced when it comes to being a horse trainer or a, you know, a barn owner and doing what you're doing. You're dealing with kids that they have all clean slates, you know, and they come in from different environments versus some of these other people. They're dealing with kids that are from generations and generations that have had horses their whole lives and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I think it's cool as hell the way you just explained it. I just think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, Silly Girl is the horse he has is the sister to three of my Appaloosa stallions. And she's the older sister. And I told him, I said, Corey, you graduate high school, take Silly Girl wherever you want. She's yours. All you got to do is bring me a diploma. That's it. She's yours. And
oh,
he
wow.
said, for real? I said, yes. Or if you don't want to take Silly Girl and you want to keep her in a program for somebody else, you could breed Silly Girl to any baby. You can have any baby you want. We could breed Silly Girl to one of the quarter horse stallions. And you can have a baby. Whichever you choose, you bring me a diploma in four more years. Well, this is his freshman year. So you bring me a diploma, she's yours. You can take her wherever you want to take her. And that's
oh,
the
wow.
same thing that happened for me with my childhood stallion. When I was 18, they came to me with his papers, with a signed transfer, and said, congratulations.
Well, wait. Whoa. So when you were a teenager, you handled a stud back then when you were young, too. The studs were around when you were younger, not just when you got older, right?
Yeah, I've had a stallion when I was younger, not the same one.
Oh, holy cow. That's cool.
So, yeah, Philly Dollar. I was here the day he was born, and he died in my arms 18 years later. And, yeah, I was 11 years old when he was born. So when I was 13, I got to get on his back for the first time. And I did everything with him, everything, every discipline. I even did first-level dressage with him.
So oh, my, how cool is that?
I didn't have, it wasn't that many dressage people locally that I
yeah.
could, you know, learn from. And it
yeah.
was actually kind of, no offense to any dressage people, it was very
yeah.
boring to me. I liked the freestyle dressage. I liked that
yeah.
part of it. But, you know, that stallion has done everything with me. And when I graduated high school, he was mine. And I got I didn't take him until... I didn't take him from where he was born until maybe I was 24. And I wanted to go to a different stable, but I still stayed there. After high school, I still kept him there. You know, that
is
was
really cool.
He was the stallion because, you know, I had that stallion stigma, you know, forced into my head by a lot of different people. And he taught me horsemanship, and he taught me that you can't beat up on a stallion. You don't need to beat up on any horse to get your point across. And you have to negotiate. I learned that you have to negotiate with a stallion, and you give him something he likes, he's going to give you something you like. And, you know, he used to stand in the show ring next to mares. And I, at that young age, I didn't have that much control over what happened with him because I didn't own him then. And they kept him isolated. And I noticed.
Why?
Because he was a stallion. And I noticed when you, and he's been live covered by my uncle, so I know that when you isolate a stallion, and I tell people all the time, if you isolate them, of course they're going to feel like, you know, there's something, they got a lot to say when they finally get out into society.
Right, yeah. Well, horses are herd animals anyway, so.
Right, and there's a difference between a stallion hollering and speaking, and there's a difference between a stallion being studdish. There's a big difference. And they are the best of friends.
Well, did you just say the studs are the boss of the herd?
No. Actually, the Shetland pony is. He runs the entire show.
That is true, though. Them little ponies don't play.
Yeah, she runs the entire show.
I believe it.
But the stallions, they're the best of friends. Of course, they have their own pecking order, but none of it. They get along. They don't fight. I would swap their stalls around because they have those partition walls where it's bars so they can always see each other and lick each other. And I would swap their stalls around so they have a chance with this one. They know each other. They are friends.
That's
they lick each other.
Move.
They groom each other. And I learned that from my childhood to not isolate a stallion. And I've put them not next to mares, but across from a mare, and I put them a stall over from a mare. Because, yes, and I'll make jokes, and now, Mama, her smell funny. And, like, but they have to see it. And the more they see it, the less that they care about it. Just like going riding in the neighborhood, the more they see it, the less they care.
Yeah. I can see that because I haven't even thought about it like that.
Because they have ground manners. Teach your horses ground manners. You don't have to worry about this. Stallion, gelding, mare. And I've been drugged by one of my mares. But not the stallion.
I was just fixing to ask you about that. You mentioned earlier how you would rather deal with, not that you can't deal with all of them, but you would rather, you know, deal with the studs and the stallions versus the mares because, you know, people get real, I'm sure you've seen it on social media, people will get real, oh, if you can't handle a mare, blah, 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 or if you can't handle a stallion or even chestnut, they're like chestnut horses and da-da-da-da. And sometimes I just look at that stuff and I just think to myself, this is so dumb, and I can't believe the general public even believes it, number one. Number two, some horses just don't get along with some people regardless of what they are. You know?
Yeah, it's more so an energy thing. And
yeah.
I think they feed off of it. And I get along with our mares. We have a different type of relationship. I don't really step into their space, insert myself into their space. But too often, other than the necessary stuff, they know they have to be respectful. And I do feed them every day. So you're pinning your ears back. They're more emotional to me. And
right.
They're women. They're very emotional. But you pin your ears back. Okay, well, I'll be back with your bucket. And I'm going to go back down the line. And I'll stand there until they, you know, people look at me like I'm crazy. But I'll stand there until they got their ears forward. And they're losing this anxious behavior that they have. They understand it. They know exactly what they're doing. So
right.
I don't think people give horses enough credit. So once they lose that anxious side, okay, maybe you can eat. But I know the mares are more emotional, and I have a different approach with them. We get along. But the stallions, they're playful. They're boys. They're more affectionate. The mares are affectionate too, but I don't ever really. They're not my main focus. We have 14 horses,
right.
So.
Well, I'm glad you said that.
Are not emotional.
I'm glad you said that because I actually had a conversation with somebody once where. It was like they were really bound and determined to just be a dominance over a mare. And I kept telling the girl, I was like, you're doing it all wrong. Like, you don't need to dominate over a mare to get her to be some type of way. I said, you know, 99% of the time, like what you're saying, the ears back and they want to be some, like, emotional, actually. That's a perfect word. You said it. When they get emotional, most of it, if you just, like, don't do anything about, like, if you just, I don't want to say don't even do anything about it. But most of it's bluff. It's like, okay, well, you're acting like a woman right now. We'll just calm down for a minute. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I remember being in this conversation with this girl, and she just kept talking about how, no, they don't need to do that. You need to dominate over them, and don't let them act like that and, like, reprimand them for that. And I'm like, well, that is your problem entirely right there. If you would just stop, let her get it out
right.
of her system, it's not a sense of, unless she physically comes at you, it's just bluff.
Yeah, it's I think that's a person, I'm not going to call it a fear tactic, I'm going to call it their own insecurities, lack of knowledge, where they feel like they have to do all of this stuff. Because we, you know, I have a buskin mare, Duchess, who's a halter mare. She's a big old mare, 16-1. She, you know, when I'm not going to lie, when I first got her home, I had her on the cross ties when I walked by. And she picked her foot up, and I lost my everlasting mind. And I'm like, okay, we're going to do that. You know, I thought she was trying to kick me. But Duchess, even to this day, 2 years later, you walk by Duchess, she's going to pick her foot up. And it's not like she's not kicking at you. She's picking it up. It's her own. And ever since that first day, I had to step back and look at it like, okay, I've never dealt with your type before. I saw with the stallions and geldings, she was the first mare. And, you know, she's basically making a open, I don't know if I want to call her the open-ended threat. She's, you know, she's a prima donna. She's picking up her foot. And she only does it to certain people. I am one of the people she does it to, but she doesn't kick at me. She just walks by, she's picking that foot up. And I just ignore her. And I tell people, ignore her. She's not, I promise you, she is not, I've had her for 2 years, she is not going to kick you.
Right.
She is just picking her foot up. That is, and I told the boys, I said, we don't know. This mare has been a world champion since she was 6 months old. So she's lived that tough show life. We don't know what she's had to deal with up until this point. Just because she's been a world champion all of her life and competing all of her life doesn't necessarily mean it was a good life. We don't know.
Right.
I come from a generation where a horse is supposed to do it because you said so. But that's not necessarily correct. And I told the boys as I got older, I don't want to force a horse to do anything. You want them to want to do it. And that's where the horsemanship part comes along. That's the psychological, I'm not going to say manipulate the certain situations, but you can. But you want to get them to sometimes even feel like it's their idea to do it. And they like it a lot more that way. Like you can, you know, you can, I know people that force a horse, you know, they try to teach a horse how to bow and they force them to do it. And I'm like, sometimes it's a painful method. And I'm like, why do that when, you know, there's different, take a few more steps and you have a horse realizing, okay, if I put my knee on the ground, this person is happy, I get scratched and I get to get up, like instead of forcing them to do it, you get a much better partner. I want a partner. I don't want a slave. I don't want a peasant. I want a friend, like a...
Right.
Something. So, and that's how I, you know, explain it to the boys. You want them to want to do this for you. And once they want to, you'll have a better understanding. You'll have a better relationship with them. So, yeah,
I agree 110% with what you're saying, and I'm glad you're saying it because the horse does deserve a lot more respect than what they get, and that even goes back to what we were talking about with the people on, not just the trolls online, but the people in general online that think they know everything they know about the horse industry and training horses. It's almost like some of them just have an ego they're wanting to talk about instead of actually care about the horse, like how you speak and what I'm feeling from you and your energy. I think it's great, and I hope more people can kind of see it from your perspective and integrate what you say into their program, regardless if it's halter, or whatever it is. it's refreshing.
Yeah, a lot of people, they ask, like, so, okay, the horse, so after the horse shows halter, then what? I don't know. Halter is just a short 4 years of their life. They'll go on to saddle. Well, what discipline are they going to do? I don't know. And I told Corey today, the horses always pick their discipline. You can watch a horse in a pasture setting and see how they move. You can watch a horse and while you're doing groundwork and see how they move. And when you're doing different things with a horse on the saddle, you'll be able to tell. Some horses, you know, they really like jumping. They really like it. Some horses, people try to turn them into a hunter because they're big, they're flashy, they have, you know, big flowing movement and fluid, but once you put a fence in front of them, they're like, oh, okay, I don't want to do this part. And, you know, so a horse will always tell you what discipline they want to do. I always let a horse choose a discipline, and it's up to you as a person, if you're versatile enough, to do what discipline that horse wants to do. It sounds a lot easier than it actually is. But I feel like that's the best way to let the horse pick. If this horse, you can't, you know, put some draw reins or a training aid on a horse and think you're going to slow it down and make it a Western pleasure horse with his head between his legs, rolling potatoes across the sand with his nose. Not every horse wants to be slow. Some horses want to go, like, and I feel like you should let them do that. You should let them decide. You know, there are horses that don't want to move fast and that are balanced and that are, you know, they have more woe than go. Those would be your Western pleasure horses and your hunter on the saddles. Like, they're telling you what they like. They're telling you what they're comfortable doing. I feel like a lot of people don't give the horse the say. It's always like what we were just saying. You're going to do this because this is what you're bred to do. This is what I want to do. This is the only thing I know how to do, so you're going to do it. And if you don't do it for me, I'm going to send you to a trainer, and Lord knows what the heck. You know, a trainer, they're going to give you that price, and if you pay for it, they're just, I think a lot of them are going to get the job done the best way they can, and I think that's where a lot of these horses come from with the Rubik's Cube mentality. We're going to have bad days. Horses are going to have bad days. But the moment you step on your horse's back, you need to be emotionless. You need to keep your emotions on the ground. And when you're working with a horse, I told them, I said, if I'm having a bad day or, you know, I'm human, I'm going through something, I told them, I said, you guys won't see me work with a horse. And they said, no, you always try to go home fast. I said, right, because I know what works for me. I need to go home, take a shower, jump in my bed. Sleeping is the best medicine for me. So I'm not going to work with a horse and because I'm already feeling some type of way. And right. I don't want my energy to transfer to said horse. And because it happens easier than people think. And I said, or I'm already in my head about something else and not paying attention. And the horse could do something minor that since I'm in a bad mood or whatever, I may overreact instead of normally I wouldn't even react to it at all. So keep your emotions on the ground, and you have to be emotionless. Because they feel the slightest thing. I read something about they could feel a fly on a blade of grass. I don't know how many feet away. I'm like, what the heck? So they're more sensitive than people are actually giving them credit for.
Oh, I agree 110%. I've even seen it. I can remember now, and I haven't shown in years and years and years, but if I was having a bad day and I was anxious and I was nervous and I was all this kind of stuff, it was almost guaranteed that my horse was going to feel that same emotion and it was going to be a bad ride versus where if I was like cool, calm, and collected and I was having a good day, and I was chill and, like, you know, confident, not egotistical or, like, but confident in myself, right. You know, we had a better ride. I 110% agree. They can feel your energy.
Right. So, yeah, that's something that is important that a lot of people don't take into consideration. And I tell the kids, like, these are things that I learned as an adult. And I said, you're always going to learn. And I told them today, like, one of my kids, I've been teaching her since she was 8 years old. She is 22, riding on a level something. And she's a jumper. I said, but I can only teach her what I know, what I've done. You have to go somewhere else to get to a step farther. And I think I was telling the boys, a lot of trainers have to, and coaches have to be comfortable with that, but they're not. And they're not comfortable, A, because they don't want to lose the money, and B, their ego, you know? But you can't learn everything from one person. You have to experience so many different people, and you have to know right from wrong, and or do this way, or here's a different way to do this, and here's a different way. A person can only teach you what they've done, what they know. And it's up to you. If you want to further it, you have to go somewhere else. Just like that person coaching you, they have to go somewhere else. So there's always something to learn. And even with the horses, like, I was changing light bulbs in their stalls before I went on vacation, or went out of town, rather. And I just went in the horse's stall, popped out the ladder, and climbed up there, left them in the stalls. And I said, horses have to be okay with expecting the unexpected. Expecting the unexpected. So you pop out a ladder and you just climb up there. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, I'm going up there minding my business. Eat your hay, mind your business. I'm minding my business. But when you expose them to this different type of stuff, nothing throws them off. They're just, oh, this is something weird she's doing again. Okay. Let me go back to my business.
Well, I'm glad you brought up HYPP because I don't want to say it's getting to be a little more comfortable to handle now, but it is becoming more comfortable for people to have and handle because of the research. Like what you just said, you know, getting out there and getting your actual knowledge about it, you can move forward with it, and it's not as, you know what to do now when you move forward, when you learn a little bit more about it, like everything you're talking now with your uncle and how to handle, you know, this particular horse.
Yeah, I used to be scared of it. And I think I have, out of the 14, I have 1, 2, 3 who are NH, and I have 3 that are PSSM1, which I had to learn about. And it's not, I'm not scared of it. And people, you know, it's still a bad stigma around it to a point. But so what do you say? And my response to a lot of people on the internet is, well, so what are you supposed to do? Throw them away? Their life isn't valuable or worth anything because they have a genetically born disease they have, like, I didn't give it to them. So what am I supposed to do? Not give them a good life? I know how to handle these situations. I know I can spot an HYPP attack on one of the other ones or a PSSM attack a mile away. And fortunately, it's all diet and nutrition. And if your diet and nutrition, you have a great feeding program, you're pretty much good for the most part. Now, there's a horse that was donated, and he's a black gelding. He does have HYPP, and they told me that he, you know, has attacks, and I'm like, okay, well, I ain't worried about it. And he didn't have you know, they sent him with orchard grass, you know, as a transitional hay. And I'm thinking about it on my drive home from Michigan. I'm like, orchard grass. HYPP horses can't have orchard grass. So that's why he's probably having these attacks. And for months, he did not have an attack until we had, like, this extreme heat wave. And I noticed, I went to the barn to do the PM feed, and I noticed he was sweaty. And then I looked, but I'm like, his fan is on. And then I looked at the other horses, and they're not sweaty. So I touched him, and it was cold sweat. And then I started looking, and I could see the muscle tremors. I said, okay, well, you know, got the chiral syrup, the potassium, the acetazolamide, some banamine, here you go. And he, and I had to think about what triggered this attack. And I'm like, okay, I know weather, drastic weather changes can do it. So he's that type that's very sensitive, that a weather change can do it. He was fine, you know, right after that, but I caught it. I knew what to look for. I have everything on handy that he needed. But, you know, nutrition is a big part of it.
Like, yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, sweet feed and, you know, HYPP horses, they're not supposed to have orchard grass hay. They can have all the Timothy hay in the world. And if you give them alfalfa, it has to be like a mixture, whereas the PSSM horses can only have straight alfalfa. You can throw some Timothy in here and there, but they really, the Timothy hay has too much sugar in it for a PSSM horse. So they need
to be on
a strict.
I did not know this. This is very informative.
Yeah, they need to be on a strict alfalfa hay diet. I do toss some Timothy here, but it's usually one flake.
Right.
And but they're still good. And vitamin E is also good for PSSM horses. And a low-carb, low-starch grain is the best for HYPP and PSSM horses. HYPP horses can have sweet feed or grain with molasses, but, I mean, every horse is not the same.
Right.
So you have to know your horse, and you have to constantly
right.
watch these things. But instead of doing that, I'm just going to feed what I know you're supposed to eat instead of, you know, trying
your
to
research.
Be different. Right. So,
yeah,
that's, I think, but I'm not scared of any of those genetics. Orange traits. They don't.
You are not, and I think it's awesome because it would scare. I'm glad you said that. It would scare me, and I feel confident. Like I'm not super into. I'm not a dumb horse person. I feel like I could do it, but you are right. I would be scared. I would leer away from it, probably because I didn't, you know, don't know enough about it. But no, you're definitely not scared, and I think it's really cool. And